everything that it was ridiculous that we weren't growing food, and came up with the concept of the co-op, which he'd been reading about, and decided it could work here because the people did have a natural history of working together and cooperating both in the agricultural development and growing a crop, but also just in living and surviving. So he thought it would be a good place to test the co-op stuff. Got in touch with Father McKnight, who had established himself as an expert in development and administration of co-ops. And that's how I got involved in with the co-op, with the health center, and later on with the co-op.
All right. Hatchett comes from my hometown and had worked in the South End Settlement House with Mel King.
Right.
Before he came south to work in Mound Bayou.
Exactly.
That's just a footnote there.
Right, right.
Go ahead.
And he had also apparently been in Arkansas, had had some experience in Arkansas. Mm. And when he started with that project, when they was looking for a site to try this model of healthcare delivery, he had gone the summer before to Arkansas to see if that would be a place. The Rockefellers had given Arkansas a better profile with their contributions to and dedication to education than Mississippi had. So they first tried to see if they could do the project in Arkansas.
In Arkansas.
The health center.
Now, you know that Geiger had done a health project in South Africa.
Well, I know that now.
Before
the time,
he came to organize the community health centers in Boston and in Mound Bayou.
Right. I didn't know that at the time. I found out all of that stuff much later. And of course, like I said earlier, some of the people were much more astute of what was going on in this area than we were here. And I learned from some of the folks who came with Geiger here that he had done that. And, you know, it wasn't presented to me in any negative way or anything, but some folks had questions about why here and why us. There was a lot of, I guess after the Bad Blood book was published, and everybody really finally knew what had gone on at Tuskegee, there was some concern in some people's mind about what it was all about and whether or not we should be concerned.
All right.
I was.
Are you at Stony Brook yet?
No, I went to Stony Brook after I'd been at the health center for several years. I went to work at the health center, if I'm remembering correctly, maybe in '66 or '67.
Johnny Tarr.
And worked there several years before going to Stony Brook. I went to Stony Brook in 1971.
Oh, was that when you went to Stony Brook?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, because when I was the chairman of the board, you were gone.
Yeah, we worked at the, you was elected chairman of the board after I left.
Yeah.
And
then had to serve as director of the project for a year.
Exactly.
While they had to find somebody.
Exactly.
That history ain't written.
And
they didn't write that.
I had run successfully the farm co-op, had built a processing plant, had supported the Brick Creek factory by buying enough Brick Creek to build.
Oh, you remember
the
that?
The new
Do you remember
factory.
That? Do you remember the Brick Creek factory?
Of course, I remember it.
You remember who it was that
we
bought
Brick
from
Georgia?
Who was that I brought from Georgia?
Oh, I don't know who that was. But he stayed out there working out there for a long time.
That was the expert this guy was the organizer. He came to Mound Bayou and made a presentation to the Mound Bayou Development Corporation,
mm-hmm.
right, about the advisability of locating a factory. We needed to locate a factory in North Bolivar County that black people could own and control.
Mm-hmm.
And we chose that Brick Creek factory.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of his name. He's dead. He's passed on.
Okay.
Okay, so did you tell us how you got to Stony Brook?
Oh, well, we had one of the things that had happened with the health center project was it had formed a relationship with Stony Brook, and one of the things that had started in 1964 with the Freedom Summer Volunteers was that they went back and they asked their schools to extend scholarships to people from here that they met.
Oh, let me correct one thing. Geiger left Tufts and went to Stony Brook.
Yes, he did.
And carried the project
with him to Stony Brook.
With him to Stony Brook.
Right.
See, Tufts was the sponsor of the Mound Bayou Health Center,
exactly,
right?
Right.
And when he
And of the Columbia Point.
And also the Columbia Point Project,
right,
also, which
right
was in Boston.
Right.
So he took that to Stony Brook with him.
Yes, he
and
did.
Stony Brook accepted, and that's, they acquired a medical school after that.
Oh, yes, they did.
Yeah.
They did.
So
and
that's how that happened.
And I don't know if we've made it very clear that,
mm-hmm,
that this, the success of the project in Mound Bayou really was based on the fact that the grant never came directly to Mississippi, where local politicians could have killed it as they tried with several things, but it was sent to a institution of higher learning, which had a different connotation and a different set of laws that made it safe.
Okay. Now, also, OEO was involved because
yes,
Jack got the first grant out of OEO at that time had a medical component.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. French, I believe, was
right,
the OEO director.
Right.
And Jack had negotiated to get that grant for the two health centers,
mm-hmm,
from the OEO.
Right.
Okay, and that's how those...
Rudy Frank.
Yeah, that's how that was. They were funded.
Yes.
They were funded by OEO, and the sponsorship was at the two institutions of higher learning.
Exactly.
Right.
And that was... But even if in Mississippi, there was always this business of the state officials,
mm-hmm,
overriding and returning the money to the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the things that you couldn't do it if it was to an institution of higher learning.
All right.
And that was how one of the things that the school had been asked to do as far back as 65 when we had 64 and 65 when all the students came to spend their time doing
Office
voter registration.
Office of Health Affairs, that's what it was.
The Office of Health Affairs.
But in OEO.
Right. Yeah. When the students had come to volunteer to get people registered to vote, one of the things that they had done was gone back and asked the trustees of their schools to extend scholarship support to children in the states that they had worked in, Mississippi being one of those states. And so the other opportunities that having these projects funded by the state and having a relationship with universities offered to people in Mississippi and Arkansas and other places where they located was educational opportunities for the young people in our communities. And that was one of the things that I was attracted to by what Mound Bayou was doing. I dropped out of school in 11th grade, got married, started having kids, and
hold up, Belle. Hold up, Belle.
Okay.
Hold up. Let's go back a piece. Because we need to insert in there. Were you there when the big political push to get the hospital out of the control of the Knights and Daughters of Tabor happened, and that became then after they succeeded in Knights and Daughters of Tabor giving up actually their ownership and operation of their hospital, right? It became the Mound Bayou Community Hospital and Health Center. And that when they organized their own board, right? And it became independently controlled, right?
Mm-hmm.
By the board of directors that had been organized out of the four county area, Bolivar, Washington, Sunflower, and what was
and
it?
Cahoma.
And Cahoma?
Mm-hmm.
No, it wasn't Cahoma, because
well,
Cahoma
had to be
no, Bolivar, Washington, Sunflower.
Cahoma.
Because Cahoma had its own, it had its own health center, you remember? It was a four county area.
But it didn't have it at the time that we organized that one. It came in later. Aaron Henry brought it in later.
Okay. Bolivar, Washington. I didn't think in life I'd ever forget
Bolivar,
that.
Sunflower,
yeah.
Washington, and Cajon.
Were the four counties.
They were the four counties.
Okay. Right.
Later on, they brought in, Aaron Henry brought in the health center. But the very first one that included, when you started with a half county, remember you started with a half county in Bolivar County for the Tufts project.
Mm-hmm.
And later on, you got the whole county. That was a condition that the Department of Public Health demanded,
okay,
that you only operate in the north end of Bolivar County, because they had the health department had a big clinic in Cleveland, which wasn't doing nothing as much as we were doing, but that was part of the conditions that we had.
But people came from all over the county.
Yes, of course they did. They, of course they did.
To get the services.
Yes, they did. And then later on, the thing, when you did the new corporate changes, you included Cajoma County.
Well, anyhow, there was a big struggle to wrest the control of that hospital from the Knights and Daughters of Table.
Mm-hmm.
And they even sent for that doctor in Chicago who had...
T.R.M. Howard.
They sent for Dr. Howard to come to Mount Bayou. Remember that?
No, I was in Stony Brook.
Oh, you were in Stony Brook.
I was in Stony Brook when all that was going on.
And they sent for Howard to come out of Chicago.
Right.
To convince the Mount Bayou people and the Zamorian people to give up, the control of that hospital so that the health center would have its own hospital to refer its clientele to, because that's what the ambulatory health care center needed, was a hospital.
Right?
Because none of the hospitals in Bolivar County would accept their referrals.
And so how come we couldn't just contract with them? I never did understand. I wasn't here, so I wasn't in any of the...
Why didn't we contract with who?
Why couldn't we just have a contract with the Knights and Daughters of Tabor to provide what do you call it, not hospital services, provide inpatient care?
Because they didn't have a full, it wasn't a full service hospital, in fact.
All right. So that could have been a condition of the contract. I just wonder how come I wasn't at the table, so I could tell people what they needed to do to keep both of them happy.
You know, when they got the grant from OEO to operate the hospital, they had to expand the capability of the hospital.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
And that's how that happened. But, that was a tough struggle. And those people never forgave the health center people for having to give up control of their hospital, which had dated back to the 40s. And was the first prepaid health program
in the country.
In the Mississippi Delta.
No, in the country.
Okay, in the
country. In the country.
I'm sorry.
The Woodmans.
Yes.
What was the rest of their name?
That's the fraternal order.
I know it is, but what was the rest of their name? Woodmans of America.
The Woodmans of America
had tried to get that in Yazoo City.
Oh,
but they had
now
not,
that piece I didn't know.
They had not been successful. And there's an interesting book. I'm trying to think, what's the name of the book that's got some of this history in it about how the organization was formed, the Knights were formed to free the slaves. That's how far back this concept of health care became, because they found out by the time Moses Dixon got his army together to come in and free the last slaves, which of course was in Mississippi.
Those people used to pay 50 cents in a dollar.
That's right.
To Knights and Daughters
and,
of Tabor.
And had
for the privilege of going to that little hospital in Mount Bayou.
That's right.
Yep.
And
the relationship, you can't leave out the relationship of Meharry.
To that.
With that hospital for years. Because Meharry sent surgical interns to Mount Bayou to work in the Mount Bayou hospital to do their, what do you call it? Do whatever they
didn't learn how to cut.
Yeah.
Didn't learn how to cut.
How
that's
to
not
cut
what they
baby.
Call it.
Yeah.
But no, not to cut a baby.
But they were interns. They were surgical interns from Meharry.
And they didn't just send...
And they've been doing that for years.
They didn't just send the surgical interns. They also sent the nurses. They sent everybody. Because you didn't have as many places for their black students to go because of segregation.
Yeah. And that was a long-standing relationship between Meharry and Mount Bayou.
It's a book and a movie that we just have to make sure somebody writes before me and you pass.
Oh, I know.
No, that history's
up there. Nobody remembers that stuff.
That history's up there in Meharry.
Yeah. And then, because I used to go back and forth to Meharry when I was on the board.
Yeah.
Negotiating with the president of Meharry to continue the relationship with the hospital in Mount Bayou. Yeah.
And they got no credit. They got no credit. That was one of the things they made with Jack about until this day. They got no credit.
Sad ending of that story was the total loss of the hospital. Because when Richard Nixon came into office, the program was given over to what used to be HEW, but they had changed the name. I don't remember what they changed the name, but and primary care was all that the health center could do, and they couldn't provide any inpatient services, and they couldn't provide any outreach because they had an environmental program. It was the first environmental program in the Delta.
Mm-hmm.
The Delta Health Center
in the state.
And they had to cut all of that out.
That's right. Because they even what the health department did was sanitation. They didn't have a full environmental program.
Yeah.
They had the first trained registered sanitarium. The health center.
But a lot of that was, the people in Mumbai lacked vision, and really didn't do as much as they could have done to save the hospital.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
And part of it had to do
because a new hospital needed to be rebuilt.
Oh, yeah.
And they never were successful in doing that.
It needed to be rebuilt by the standards.
And the politics wouldn't allow for them to. You had to go to the state to get a permit to build a hospital.
Well, and
there had
operate
to be a need. What we went through in that, right? You had to establish the need. You had to say that a number of beds. Were not available in the geography
that you want to build a hospital in. The key sentence is what you said earlier. The people in Mount Baya had a competition among themselves that they were never able to overcome. That trait goes all the way back to Moses Dixon. And when you really look at the fact that that little town had two hospitals.
Yeah.
You understand.
Friendship.
That's Friendship and
yeah.
The table.
Burden's Hospital.
That's right. You understand then what the problem was. And
yeah.
That should have been a warning to us from outside.
There was a lot of history there.
It really was. And even till this, even in recent years, I remember when people like Helen Bell was trying to find a new use for and a new opportunity for this hospital. She was running around talking to medicine makers. What do you call those people who make medicine? And trying to get the hospital and convert it to offices and a plant to manufacture medicine in Mount Baya. And got people willing to look at the possibility of doing that. And you couldn't get people to sit down at the table and be willing to give up ownership of what really has become the legacy. You didn't have anything else but your history.
Yeah.
And your history wasn't going to disappear. But you had a possibility for exploring a new use. Of a plant, and we just couldn't even get it off the ground. I remember her spending a lot of time up there in Memphis trying to get that done.
She was from
Cleveland, but she understood the significance of what those two institutions represented, and she was looking for another way to make them work.
And HEW wouldn't fund the hospital anymore. It wasn't so much of HEW.
You couldn't get the people at the local level to understand you have to change the rules that you operate by to the rules that we have to operate by, called the Congress. Is where the money's coming from.
Yeah.
You couldn't get the local folks to do that.
Well, they lost the hospital.
I remember when some of them same local folks that caused the loss of the hospital said to me, when I opened up a clinic in Greenville, they came to me and said, you ain't got no business taking nothing out of this town because we open up to you and everything you have should be right here. That's when I was head of the director of the health center.
Tell us how you came to it. That's another chapter of that story. How did you come to be the director of the Mount Bayou Community Health Center?
Because
they had to drop the name of the hospital after they lost the hospital. Yep.
Which is a very interesting thing. And really, I was director of it when it was still Mount Bayou Community Health Center and Hospital. I was there when we had to go back and change the charter. To reflect our true identity and not be liable if anybody fell over in the swimming pool at the Sarah Brown and drowned and everything.
Yeah.
I really applied for the position, and I know the history of how we hire people here, and I know that there's unspoken bias sometimes against women, and there's persistence bias against women that we consider outspoken and troublemaking. And in a place like Mount Baya where hair texture and color of skin is also important. I was the wrong color, the wrong gender, and had nappy hair, and I understood that I might have a hard time because I also had no...
I had a big mouth.
And had no genealogy that anybody respected. You know, my daddy hadn't been part of the founding fathers or anything. And I just applied for the position and together with other people, and a community board really recommended that I be the one who got it. And when you look at the makeup of the community board, I have to say it was the community board influence that made that the result of me getting it. It had on it people with whom I had worked since the 60s and people who had known me since I moved to Shelby from church, and people who admired the work I'd done with the co-op from an administrative point of view. That it had an all-male.
Now, what year was that? Yeah. That you became the director?
Jesus on. It was after...
It's in the 80s.
It's in the 80s, and I can't remember if it was 80s.
And was it after they had dismantled our board and kicked us all out?
Yes, and I was one of the first person hired after you all had been elevated to another level of responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I can't remember. Really, I'd have to go look at my notes. I can't remember if I came in. Well, let's see. I came in after Howard. So I finished Howard in 83. No.
After you did your graduate work at Howard U.
And so that was 80, I finished that in 80...
84, 85.
85.
Ooh, around
85.
There. Yeah.
85, so it must have been that was where I came after I got through with Howard. So it must have been 85.
85, mm-hmm. All right. 1985.
Oh, boy.
Okay, so we skipped a bunch of stuff in terms of your...
A lot of stuff has been going on.
Well, you had a number of different... you had a lot of activities before you went to get your graduate degree.
Well, we went... I went...
You went to Ole Miss what'd you do? 1 year?
1 year at Ole Miss.
1 year at law school.
That's right. After working with the co-op and everything, mm-hmm. I went to...
You got another one, right? There. Okay, hold up, Bill.
Okay.
Well, let's turn this off a minute. All right, Mrs. Dorsey, we're going to resume our discussion here. And we want to start back around 1975. Where were you then?
In 75, I had come back from Stony Brook in New York, where I'd been for 2 years working on a degree, and had been singularly unsuccessful in finding work in Bolivar County.
Mm-hmm.
I wound up going over to Washington County with Jimmy Thornton and the Head Start Project, and was hired there to do the Director of Social Services, which meant, of course, going out in the community, helping to inform the people about the existence of the program, the services provided by the program, and helping to recruit interest and commitment of parents to enroll their children in the program.
The Head Start program.
And the Head Start, Washington County Opportunities, Inc. Mm-hmm. That's right.
And you stayed there how long?
I stayed there about a year.
And then you left and went where?
I left and went to the University of Mississippi Law School.
Okay.
I had long been admiring of all of the lawyers the civil rights people had brought into the community, Marion Wright Edelman and all of the rest of the people, and I thought maybe my calling in life was to be a lawyer.
You went to Ole Miss?
I went to Ole Miss Law School. I spent a year there. It was less than glamorous performance in terms of my concern. My marriage to my children's father, which had been a rocky affair for the last few years, finally came to a screaming, screeching halt, as they say in literature.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to make a decision after we decided to go our separate ways and get a divorce about what was the most important thing for me to do, to finish getting my kids out of school and educated, or to pursue my dream of becoming a lawyer, fighting for freedom in the courtroom. And I really warned out to having to go get a job and take care of the kids.
Right.
I really needed to put some distance between me and their father, so we moved to Jackson, I went to work in 1975 with the Prison Project at the lawyer...
Bought that old house. Remember that house?
Yes, I did. We got there a couple years later, because we rented from Voice of Calvary. And, had a great time cooking out in the backyard on a hibachi, because we didn't have a stove. God, where is my hibachi? But anyway, the kids made a pretty good transition to Jackson. Cynthia was already beginning her second
Tougaloo.
Year at Tougaloo College.
Mm-hmm. All your kids went to Tougaloo.
That's right. Well, we had a couple of Jackson State defectors, but...
Yeah, you did? I didn't know that.
Well, Michael went first to Tougaloo, and he said everywhere he went, everybody said, oh, you mean you, one of them Dorsey kids? Well, I know you can do better than this. So
mm-hmm.
he finally got away from Tougaloo where he could... and went to Jackson State.
All right.
Chip, of course, went to the military right out of high school, so he went to Jackson State too for a year, and then went on into the Air Force. Then
at some point, you became the associate director of the other ministry, and the head of the Southern Coalition on Jails and Prisons.
Yes, that's right. That's when the Delta Ministry was able to have an office in Greenville and in Greenwood, and after The prison project had taken on a new director, and the director and I were not really philosophically at the same place about how the project should be run. And it was decided that he would run it and I would go and do something else. So I became the associate director of the Delta Ministry with an office in Jackson and reported to the office in Greenwood. And we continued to do prison ministry through the National Council of Churches sponsorship.
Yeah.
We did that until I decided, until we was unable to raise money. That was one of the things that became a big problem. We were unable to raise money to continue the prison ministry and support two offices of it. We had support from Joe Ingalls and the Southern Coalition on Jails and Prisons.
Yeah, that's who that was. The
that's right. That's the only reason we was able to have the two offices, because money support for what we were doing, which has started with the broad-based civil rights struggle.
Now, that was a regional program, Southern Coalition on Jails and Prisons.
Eight states in the southeastern United States of America, and then the headquarters was in Nashville, where Joe lived, and I think really he was one of the better bosses we ever had. That guy was really amazing. He understood how stressful the work was and was the first person that I ever heard who was recommending that we take four-day weekends. Not that we ever did. We were such nuts about what we were doing and how we were changing the world.
That was a revolutionary
that was
concept.
Very revolutionary concept. Very revolutionary concept. Yeah. And I'm sure he will tell people today that he's the only boss who's ever offered that to the folks and never got anybody to take him up on it.
Now, the Southern Coalition, you recruited me. As I recruited you for the associate directorship of the ministry, you recruited me to help you out with the program of the Southern Coalition. Or I asked if I could come along with you.
We recruited you. We really recruited you because you were the church, and that I was strongly supported throughout the country and throughout the states that we were working in were churches.
Okay.
And representing the National Council of Churches, I thought you brought with it the possibility of expanding the lay membership in our philosophy, because we really needed to be able to have judges think about what we were trying to do. We needed to have legislators think about what we were trying to do. And you represented our greatest opportunity to do that through the National Council of Churches.
Okay, so I personally got involved.
Yes, you did.
In the program, the Southern Coalition, and accompanied you in your visitations Department Parchman Penitentiary.
Exactly.
For a period of time.
Very long period of time.
Right?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
And we did that for a while until there was an interruption when I took a sabbatical in 1980, 81, and you became you took over the directorship of the ministry for the time that I was on sabbatical. You
right.
Remember that?
Yes, I do. Okay. Glorious time.
Okay.
Did a lot of time and made a lot of friends in Greenville, Mississippi, because basically that's where I had to come to be able to direct the program. Created a great big stir when I decided that one of the people who had been on your payroll had to actually do some work that we could record and turn in, and proceeded to fire him when he refused to do so.
Oh, dare I ask who that was?
Yeah, you know who it is. You just stop and think about it. We fought about it, but later on he came back and realized that the position I took was one that he supported as well. So we became friends.
Now, all right. Okay, now we had Robert Young.
Yes, that's who the person was.
That's who that was.
Yeah.
And then by 1979, we brought aboard, we first brought Eddie Williams, and then we brought Fred Williams out of Mace.
Mm-hmm.
We liberated him from Mace,
mm-hmm.
right? And we brought on Eddie Williams later on, also from Mace, right? You were there when all that happened.
I wasn't there when Fred was there. I was still in Jackson, or I was in New York. I don't know, one of the places. But I was there when Eddie was on board.
When Eddie was on board,
and
then you were there when we brought Minister Farrakhan to tour
the state.
Mississippi.
That's right. I was running that little place down there on Ferris Street. Hamilton. Hamilton.
Oh.
I had moved into
the
office on Hamilton
office,
Street.
Right. The old land fund office.
The old land fund office.
Okay.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, which is still there, by
still there, that's right.
Jeez. Well, some things really do survive.
Yes,
they
do.
All right, go ahead, El. So what happened? What do you got next? Next step was to Howard to graduate school.
Off to Howard and graduate school. And that, I think, if my dates are right, that occurred in 88. I will. No. 85. The coursework was 2 years, and I was there from 85. I think I didn't come back to Mississippi until 88. I was
to obtain a PhD. Okay, what'd you get your PhD in?
Social work.
In social work.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Social work. Okay, and I was back in the state by then. 1985.
Well, it really, you know, the coursework was just 2 years, but you had 5 years to finish the project, so I didn't graduate from Howard until 88.
Okay.
So, and part of that time I was back in Jackson. Oh, I'm trying to remember if I came back to Jackson and went to Memphis. I remember I went to Memphis.
Well, travel.
I went to Memphis to do the writing. I went from Howard to Memphis to do the writing.
To do the writing.
Because I really didn't think I was disciplined enough to come back to Jackson where all of my
distraction.
Well, but
and
also
family.
I would be back into trying to be down at the lawyers committee or doing stuff like that, and my family was there, so I went from.
I didn't remember that.
I went to Memphis. Well, I didn't come to Jackson much. I would come. I had a little apartment off Tendleton Street in Memphis.
I
remember that I rode home on some Fridays with, because you still had to go and meet with your people at Howard. And so I remember riding home a lot of Fridays with the Ford, with Congressman Ford.
Congressman Ford.
Yeah,
oh,
we'd be
God.
on the same plane coming into Memphis.
How long did you stay in Memphis?
I stayed in Memphis 3 years.
3 years?
3 years.
No, hell.
Yes, I did. I was up there 3 years.
Which years were those?
I think I was there from the fall of 85 until 88, till the summer of 88. When I finished writing, they finally accepted my thing, and I graduated.
I didn't remember that. I don't remember that at all.
Well, I tell you, I'm having a hard time pulling it all back up, because I think it was a time when I really was most lonely.
Yeah.
I was single. The kids had grown up. Nobody needed me anymore.
That's a hell of a feeling. Yes. I remember that.
Nobody.
That's a tough feeling.
That's a tough feeling.
All right. So you came back in '88.
Came back in '88.
And which way did you go?
I went to work at the University of Mississippi in their research program over in Goodman, Mississippi. And I remember it was really such a funny interview because people always help folks finish up writing their documents and everything. And when I went for my interview and everything, everybody was sitting around the room that already worked for the project. And
Goodman is in Holmes County.
Is in Holmes County, and both of the professors they were related to medicine, but it was more of the study of the behavior of people. In a medical setting and with medical issues and stuff rather than being physicians. And we were with the we weren't with the medical center per se. This was under the pharmaceutical sciences umbrella of the thing, and my role in this area was to look at the non-medicine activities and
non-medical
activities and prescriptions that people adopted as part of their health care practices. That included the use of voodoo, herbs, and other practices that were not standard medical fare. That lasted about a year, and I applied for position as an administrator of a community health center and was hired, and I went to work. I moved back to Bolivar County and assumed the directorship in 1988.
In 88?
I think in the fall of 1988 of Delta Health Center. And I think that lasted until 88? That doesn't sound right. Or maybe 88 was... When did I go to Howard? Because I left the health center and went to Howard University to work on the... 79 may have been when I came to the health center and stayed there until...
As a director?
Yes.
It was later than that.
You think it was later than that?
Oh, I'm almost positive.
Okay. Well, I'll have to look at my resume and get the date straight.
All right.
I know that I went to Howard, I thought, and
where were you when the congressman was elected?
Now, are we talking about Benny, or are we talking about
before? Yeah,
Michael.
Espy.
I think I was here when Michael was, here in Jackson when Michael was elected.
Well, were you involved in that campaign?
Yes, but you know I was out of his district, but yes.
Okay. Well, I was just trying to put the time frames together.
Well, I have all of it on an old resume, you know, mm-hmm. exactly what, before I lost my mind, I wrote it off. I can get that for you so we can
and
plug in.
And you served as the director of the Health Center for how long?
I thought I was there about 5 or 6 years, and then I went to the university. I came to Jackson State.
Oh, okay.
That's what I thought. I went to help them do, remember it was such a stressful thing. We were being sued every day. I was going to the court every day.
Mm.
But I really don't think I was there but about, I wasn't there 10 years.
And they opened up the Greenville Clinic?
I opened up the Greenville Clinic.
When
I opened
you
up
were
the
director?
I opened up the Clarksdale Clinic.
Okay.
And, and really much against the opposition of the people in the health center and the people in Mound Valley.
Mm-hmm.
I remember all the leaders of Mound Valley coming to me and saying, everything you have needs to stay in Mound Valley.
Needs to what?
Stay in Mound Valley. We opened up so I may have been there more than 5 years. I've got to figure out these last dates. That's amazing that I can't, because this is 2006.
Right.
And I had 7 years, let's count back then from 2006. I had 7 years at the university, so that gives you back 7 from 16 is 9. So
at Jackson State? You had 7 years? How many years at Jackson State?
No, four.
Four?
So, they only give me 7 all told, so.
You were at the graduate school?
I was at the graduate school. I helped open the graduate school. Not the graduate school, at the school of social welfare. You know, they had just a
School of Social Welfare. No.
But it wasn't.
Oh, no, the whole.
No, it was
whole,
called the School of Social Work.
Yeah, but you taught in the graduate school.
I taught in the graduate school. You have to have the PhD to teach in graduate school. So after I did that, God, I can't remember that.
That's
so,
all right. Okay.
We'll get all of that.
We can't get it chronologically correct, but we know that you went to Jackson State.
Mm-hmm.
To Jackson State to teach.
And I should remember that. So that was most recent.
to teach. All right. In the late 80s?
Jackson State had to be the 90s.
Okay.
Yeah, so we're 2006. So it had to be in mid-90s. Because after Howard,
and you taught how long in Jackson State?
From Howard, I went to the health center.
Yeah, we got that.
Okay.
But we're all right with that. I think we're okay with that.
Okay. So if we stayed at, what was not clear is how long I stayed there. But we went from the health center to.
After you left the health center, you went to Jackson State.
We went to Jackson State.
And you stayed at Jackson State. How many years?
4 years.
4 years.
Mm-hmm. I think that's all I can remember, 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then from Jackson State.
For 4 years. And when you left Jackson State, you went to?
I went to the University of Mississippi Medical Center.
Oh.
Department of Family Medicine for 2 years.
Mississippi.
I forgot all about that.
For how many years?
For 2 years.
2 years. And that was Dr. Shirley's program?
That was the fellow from Hollandale program.
Edgar Smith.
Well, you're right. All that came on the Dr. Shirley Community Medicine program.
Edgar Smith and Dr. Shirley.
Mm-hmm. And then from there, when I left there,
Dr. Shirley. All right.
I went to Jackson State.
After you left the medical center, you went to Jackson State?
Mm-hmm, I think so. Doesn't sound right.
You went to Valley. After you left the, after you left Edgar and, after you left Edgar and Aaron Shirley.
I went to Valley.
You went to Valley.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. And,
to
MVSU.
And you stayed at MVSU for 2 years or three?
I should remember that. 2 years, let me just count it up.
Well, in 99, you were at Jackson State, because you preceded me. I got to Jackson. I got to the medical mall in 99, and you were already there working for Aaron Shirley and Edgar Smith.
Okay.
So that would have to be 99, probably 97, 98, and 99, and you left there about 2000, maybe 2001 or 2002, and went up to Valley?
If you were there 3 years, it must have been, because this is 2006, so if we count back, 5, 4, 6, 5, 4.
You should have gone to Valley about 2001 or 2002.
Probably did.
And you stayed at Valley for how many years?
God.
3 years?
Minimum of 3 years, because I was there for, I was there with Kathy. You remember her, Kathy Golden?
Well, I heard of her. I never met her, no.
And really, then, come to think of it, she was only there a year after I got there, and then she went to something else.
And what department of Fiat Valley? You went to social work?
No, I went to the culture.
Oh, yeah, that program. Mm-hmm. That I originated,
right.
At and least conceptually. I never got no credit for it.
And I gave him a copy of paper.
You did?
So that's what you did at MIT.
That's what I did at MIT. You gave him a copy of that?
Yeah.
Oh, then you're the felon.
I wanted you to know.
Oh, I wondered how they got that.
I wanted them to know that they didn't come up with nothing.
Oh, did you do that, Hill, really?
Yeah.
Oh, where'd you get it from?
You gave me a copy.
I did?
Yeah.
Oh, my Lord. Did you ever get it back?
Oh, I didn't give them the copy. I gave them a copy of the copy.
Oh, but you still have it?
Yeah.
When you have time, give it back to me, because I can't find a copy of it.
Oh, okay.
Okay. All right, so you stayed at Valley until?
Till June of this year.
Cultural Center.
And social work.
June.
Because I had an appointment in social work from the beginning.
June of. Yes, because you had an appointment in social work after you did the cultural center thing.
Right. But you always had it, because you had an assignment with the cultural center thing, but your appointment was in social work, because they had to put your appointment where your degree is.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And so my appointment was in social work. And
you
they
officially
were, they
retired
were
there in June of this year.
June of this year.
June of 2006. Well,
and I'll get you the dates, because we got dates on the resume at the house.
All
I didn't
right.
even think about that. That would have helped me remember this stuff.
Well, I need to. Let's see.
You should have. You probably have it in your records too.
All right. All the years you spent in the Mississippi Delta in extreme poverty. Education was important. These are your words.
It was.
Education matters. That's what you were taught.
That's right.
Your regret is having 6 careers. You had 6 careers,
mm-hmm.
and all of which have been rewarding in their way. The models have been valuable in time spent, and you're the only person who was able to get rid of the deficit at Mount Bryan. You did that at the health center.
Mm-hmm.
Black people were unfortunately your enemies in that part of your experience, and they got rid of you. and they got rid of you at Jackson State the same kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
And is it true that you regret leaving the health center in Mumbai?
I regret it.
Speak on that, because you did say that.
Yeah, I regret because I kept. You know, I think what I mixed up, and I don't know that I while I understand it intellectually, I don't know that I would be any better in practice. What I mixed up with doing a job was having people like you on the job. I mean, that was important to me, to be able to be liked, to be respected, to understand that we was all on the same team. And I think my lack of experience in a this was a new area that nobody else who had directed the health center had been in, and it was, I felt at the time, part of the history of Mound Bayou, which with its preference for the elitist, which had been the dominant behavior practice in the history, throughout the history of Mound Bayou at different times, they had that thing going on. And I never really was able, somebody said this to me who had been an observer, I was never able to really win over the hearts of the people in Mound Bayou.
Make a couple of observations about you, Al, because I've known you for 42 or 43 years, I'm not sure.
A long time.
You were unique, you were one of the people that grew up in the movement and had first a career of activism in the movement.
Mm-hmm.
And then you graduated, if I may use that phraseology,
mm-hmm.
you graduated to a professional career,
mm-hmm.
which remained movement related.
Right.
Okay? Now, I can in retrospect talk about the fact of my lack of acceptance because I was never looked on as having had a professional career here in Mississippi.
Right.
I remember people coming up to me and say, when are you going to get a real job? All right? And they did that to me.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
You had the credentials at a point in time, and you got them, you got all of that experience and job experience and then job-related experience, right, mm-hmm. in Mississippi.
Right.
And you got all that training in Mississippi.
Right.
But you were one of a kind that kind of retained you were always able to retain your feeling for people, okay? And because that's how you started out. You got out there representing the interests, right, of people, poor people, people per se. That, you know, you did. And then after you acquired some training, you still went back to help people in a different, in a professional kind of way, okay?
And I think that is, I think you put in context what I think the, when you look at the deficits of what I've been able to do, for instance, not being able to be elected to the school board in Shelby, Mississippi, when I ran for the school board. I think the one thing that you have, you just put your finger on and you did it very well, is that I got all of the stuff that one would need to do, but I kept coming back to the place that I had grown up in, that had shaped me and had shaped my values and everything. And also was the place where people knew who I was, knew that history. I remember this man being very angry at me at one job I was in where I was a supervisor, and he was saying, she better get back. It wasn't a man, it was a woman, really. Mm-hmm. From
she better get back.
From Cleveland, Mississippi. She needed to get back out there and pick some cotton.
Oh, gee.
So I really think that two things kept me from being more successful in some of the position was, one, that everybody knew from whence I came. And there were people who were angry that somehow I had managed to climb some kind of ladder and was in a position that normally had been reserved for people of a different class. In other words, what you just said helped me to understand that I never really moved beyond the structure of the class into which I was born. The education and stuff simply helped me function in these other
classes. No, in a sense you did, but in another sense you did, because you distinctly over the last 45 years wore a hat as an organizer,
mm-hmm.
then you wore a hat as a leader,
mm-hmm.
then you wore a hat as a teacher,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then you wore a hat as a scholar,
mm-hmm.
okay?
But you
so
never,
those hats...
But you never became a member of what was perceived to be in Mount Baya, in the Delta, in Mississippi, the ruling class.
Not in
Greenville, not in Bolivar County.
No, but those were hats that you wore were distinct kinds of careers that you walked through through the last 45 years. I think we have a couple of things in common. One is, as a movement people, we sought public office and never won public
office.
And there were distinct reasons why.
Mm-hmm.
And I was told at an early time in my experience here in Mississippi, Brooks, don't ever run for office.
Mm-hmm.
They told me that.
Mm-hmm.
They told me that in Greenville,
mm-hmm.
right? Over a considerable number of years. And I ran three times in Washington County,
mm-hmm.
and was never successful in winning public office.
Mm-hmm.
And I was told that I wouldn't,
mm-hmm.
because you are not the kind of person,
mm-hmm.
right, that people want
in an office,
right? And in fact, maybe you do the most good,
mm-hmm.
not as an elected official, because that compartmentalizes you,
mm-hmm.
right? And restricts your movement,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
actually restricts to a large degree what you can say
exactly
on behalf of you.
And see, I don't think those kind of considerations were given to me. I think it was the unforgiving, and I really think I heard you say something to this effect once when we were talking. It was the unforgiving spirit of the few middle class people who became the objects of some of my efforts to organize. You know, when you hold them up as examples of people who are middle class and who are only concerned about supporting the people that keep them in high places, you know,
yeah.
principals of the school and teachers in the school system and stuff like that. I think that was one of the things that I didn't do well that really created enemies for me. And when I really realized how serious it was when I ran for the school board, and people who were middle class by income and not necessarily by education were really campaigning among themselves and making sure that they got the word out not to vote for LC.
Yeah.
Because LC represented a threat to the school. She'll have black power studies up in the school and all kinds of stuff. And really, in fact, I had gone to the school board, you remember this, I had
mm-hmm.
gone to the school board and said we need to have a black studies program off the summer. I found a teacher who can teach it, and here's the curriculum. And they said, okay. And it was not the white folks who was upset about me having black studies in the school. It wasn't the teachers who was upset about me offering black studies classes. It was the parents. It was the middle class parents more than the poor working class parents, which I was a member of their class and who they saw and had fewer problems with. It was the people who was up the economic ladder who resented and who felt threatened by what they perceived as power and what I saw as responsibility.
Yeah.
When you go to the school board and they say, we want to have this, and they say, well, you have to teach it. And you go in and say, okay, I'll teach it.
Now, I always close an interview, Elle, and I'm getting ready to close this one, but I always close an interview by asking the person that I'm interviewing, help me understand what you attribute as the most important gains in Mississippi and in your lifetime, right? Since you have been since your period of involvement. What has been most important in terms of successes, and where do you think we fell flat on our face in the movement? Because I feel strongly that we did in certain areas.
Well, I think the most important gain that we made in the movement was to change the face of the elected officials in the state at all levels, state, county, and local. I grew up in a Mississippi that had no black elected official. Born in 1938 in Washington County and spent most of my, the first 30 years of my life in four Delta counties of Washington, LaFleur, Sunflower, and Bolivar. It is amazing to be able to see the number and have the largest number of black elected officials in the country, in our state, and to see them represented and operating competently at every level. To me, that is the most significant contribution that I have been involved in the state. I don't want to undercut the need for people to have access to health care, which I've been involved in, or to work with UNITA Blackwell and other folks in trying to make sure people had housing, or to try to look at developing an alternative economic area for people, as I did with the cooperative effort in the state that Mack Knight has made famous around the world. But to be able to have black people as judges, to be able to have black people elected to make the laws in the state, to have black people at the city level, to have at the county level, to run the major institutions, to set policy, I think that's the most significant thing that has come out of the civil rights movement. And I think the people in Mississippi have worked diligently to make these achievements following the pattern laid down by one of the greatest civil rights leaders, Martin Luther King. We've accomplished all of this through organizing and education without a war, without a civil war in our local counties and communities and states.
All right, Mrs. Dorsey. And has the election of black elected officials to public office in Mississippi, has that been the greatest reason there has been an improvement in the quality of life of all Mississippians, if there has been? Is that the reason?
I don't think that is the only reason, but I think the fact that we have laws that have been passed by Congress that curtail some of the violence and unfairness of people and hold local law enforcement accountable has made a big difference. But the education of local people about their rights, how to secure their rights, how to work together to empower people, and how, most importantly, to elect members from their community that understand the need for good representation has been the most important thing, I think, that this project has resulted in for us.
All right, Ms. Dorsey, I thank you very much for your time. This has been a very exciting interview for me, and I've come to know a little bit more about you, and I've known you 40-some-odd years. But, you know, every time we sit down and have some time with each other, I benefit, and I learn something. So I thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you, Mr. Brooks. I want you to know, across these 40 years of friendship, you've been a great teacher.
Well,